You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 183 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Human Evolution, A Spiritual Scientific Quest, 9 lectures, translated by Simon Blaxland DeLange. This is Lecture 2, given in Dornach on the 18th of August, 1918. Today I should like to begin by making a kind of sketch of the human soul, as this human soul is in its relationship to the world and to itself. I should like to present this sketch in such a way that one can say, we are looking at a profile of man as a soul being. Thus, in order that we may understand one another, it is as if we were to look at a physical human being, not the soul being, not in a full face position, but in profile, and, shall we say, looking toward the right. Let us observe him thus, and there's a diagram. Of course, if we try to sketch something in this way, we always have to bear in mind that we are dealing here with imaginative knowledge, and that, therefore, the essential reality lying behind such a phenomenon is being reproduced by means of a picture. The picture gives an indication of the phenomenon in question, and it is formed in such a way that it does so in a correct manner. But we should naturally not think of a drawing or sketch intended to represent something of a soul and spiritual nature in the way that one conceives of something which is a naturalistic copy of an outward sense-perceptible reality. One has to be continually conscious of what I am now saying. So I shall omit everything relating to the physical and lower etheric body of man, and shall try to sketch only the soul and soul spiritual aspects. And there's a second diagram. As you know from various descriptions that I have given, this soul and spiritual aspect has a more direct connection with the world of soul and spirit than the physical human being has with his physical surroundings. The physical human being is to a significant degree separated off from his sense-perceptible environment. One could say that this physical sense-perceptible human being is indeed enclosed within his skin. This is not so with the soul and spiritual aspect of man. For there, one has to think in terms of a continual process of transition in the streams pulsating in his inner being of soul and spirit, and in all the movements and currents flowing in the soul spiritual world as a whole. If I were to characterize from the one side the nature of the relationship of man's soul and spiritual being to the soul spiritual aspect of his cosmic surroundings, I would perhaps have to do so in the following way. I would first have to paint what enters from the universe, from the infinitude of space, like this. I should really paint the whole space in this way, but this is not really necessary. I shall only paint what is in man's immediate environment. So, this is what we may now understand as the surrounding world. Again, referring to Diagram 2. Now imagine in this pictorial form that soul spiritual environment in which man is placed. Man is not yet there, of course. What is depicted by means of this blue color is only what borders upon his domain from out of the surroundings. Imagine this to be like a surging blue sea that fills the surrounding space. Parenthesis, when I say blue sea, in quotes, this must naturally be understood as I have often characterized it in the books that are available to you, as colors are to be conceived of as a description of the aura of the soul's spiritual domain. Another aspect of the world of soul and spirit now appears, as it were, floating or hovering, as though borne upward like a wave. This is what I should have to describe now in the following way. Thus, if we pass from the cosmic environment to man, we may think of ourselves and the soul's spiritual aspect of man as in a certain sense hovering in this red. There we would have one part of the soul's spiritual domain, and if we would make the sketch accord with reality, we would have to render the upper part in a red that graduates into a kind of violet or lilac. This would be rightly shown, only if the red were toned down to violet. With this, I have presented to you one pole of man's soul spiritual nature. We arrive at the other pole if we order what relates in a floating or hovering way to the cosmic soul spiritual surroundings by way of the physical human countenance, somewhat as follows: yellow, green, orange, with green merging into the blue. Here you have what I might call a normal human aura in profile, as seen from the right. I say explicitly a normal human aura in profile viewed from the right-hand side. That this figure has been shown to visionary perception as having this particular configuration characterizes the way that man is placed within his soul spiritual environment. It also characterizes how man, as a being of soul and spirit, stands in relation to himself. If one studies what is portrayed by means of this figure, one can clearly see that man is a being who is bounded on two sides. These two sides, which determine man's limited nature, are always observed in life, but they are not interpreted correctly. They are not thought about in the right way, and are quite simply not understood. You know that in ordinary scientific circles, it is said that when man observes the world, when he wants to acquire knowledge of the world, he comes to definite limits in the knowledge that science can bequeath to him. We have often spoken of these limits, of the famous ignorabimus, we shall never know, the truth of which is asserted by scientists and many philosophers. It is said that man reaches certain limits in his knowledge, in his perception of the outer world. I have doubtless also mentioned to you the famous statement that Dubois Raymond made at the Scientific Congress in Leipzig in the 1870s. Human knowledge will never penetrate to the regions haunted by matter. This is roughly what Dubois Raymond said at that time. A more appropriate way to speak about these limits of human knowledge would be to say that it is inevitable for man to formulate certain concepts in the course of his observation of the world, which he encompasses neither with his scientific knowledge nor with his ordinary philosophical cognition. You need only to think of such phenomena as the concept of the atom. But the atom does, of course, only have meaning if one cannot speak of it, if one cannot say what an atom is. For the moment when one would begin describing the atom, it would no longer be an atom. There is something wholly unapproachable about it. Matter, actual substance itself, has a similar quality. Certain concepts have to be formulated, such as matter, force, and so on, to which one has no access. The need for such concepts to be formulated simply rests on the fact that that soul spiritual aspect of man, which has an inwardly radiant quality, is here extending into a dark void. What is stated to be the limit of knowledge can, I would say, actually be clearly seen in the aura. Man stands here before a boundary. His essential being is portrayed here in the aura by what I have allowed to flow from light green to blue-violet. But by merging into blue-violet, it ceases to be man and becomes the encircling cosmos. Man's essential being, in which resides the inner power of his perception of the world, encounters a boundary, or in a certain sense a nothingness, and he has to formulate concepts such as matter, atom, substance, force, which have no content. This resides in the way man's being is constituted, in his connection with the whole universe. Man's relationship with the universe is what is here unfolding. If we want to describe this boundary, in accordance with the ideas of spiritual science, we can do so by saying that this boundary enables man, with respect to his soul, to come in contact with the universe. By indicating the direction toward the universe with one loop of a lemniscate, one can indicate what belongs to man with the other loop, although what derives from man goes out into the universe. One therefore has to make the line of the loop, the lemniscate, open on one side and closed on the other, and draw it like this. Here the line of the loop is closed. Here it goes into infinity. It is the same line that I drew previously, except that here the two arms reach out to infinity. What I am drawing here as an open lemniscate, as an open loop, is not just something that has been thought out, but something that you can indeed see as flashes streaming in and out in a gentle but very slow movement, as an expression of man's relationship to the universe. The streaming movements of the universe continually approach man. He draws them toward him. They merge as they approach him, and then stream out again. Thus, something of this nature streams toward man, becomes intertwined, and flows out again. He is permeated by these streaming movements, originating from the universe, which stop short in front of him. As you can imagine from this description, man is surrounded by a kind of wave-like aura. These streaming movements flow in from the universe, from a vortex, and as it were greet man by forming a vortex in front of him, so that he is surrounded here by a kind of auric stream. This is essentially an expression of man's relationship to the universe, to his soul spiritual surroundings. You can find what you experience as lying in your consciousness depicted here as a mixture of blue, green, and yellow, merging into orange toward the inner region. But at this point it comes up against something else. For within the inner region of man's soul being, this yellow and orange encounters the soul spiritual aspect of the lower part of man's being, which oscillates on the blue sea. What I have shown here as red, merging into orange, belongs to the subconscious parts of man, and indeed also corresponds to those processes in the physical organism that are mainly involved with the activity of digestion and so forth, where consciousness plays no part. The region associated with consciousness would be characterized by the lighter parts of the aura, as I have drawn them here, diagram 2. Just as man's soul spiritual nature is described here as meeting the soul spiritual aspect of the surrounding world, so does it have an inner encounter with his subconscious, which indeed also forms part of the universe. I need to draw this meeting of the streams in such a way that one of them reaches out to infinity, whereas I have to draw the encounter within man in a different way. Here I must also draw a loop, but I have to draw this one so that it has an inward orientation. Please notice that I am still drawing a loop, but I am taking the lower loop and inverting it so that it goes like this. And there's a diagram, 6. So I invert the lower loop, in contrast to the above diagram 5, where I cause one of the loops to open out to infinity, I now invert the lower loop. With this, I have given a pictorial image of the obstacles that arise when the inner aspect of the soul's spiritual domain makes contact with the subconscious, and hence also cosmic, soul, and spiritual world. I must therefore characterize these obstacles that arise in man, if I draw them in a manner that corresponds to them in this way, bracket, 7 lemnis gates with inverted loops, close bracket. These are the obstacles that correspond to an inner wave or undulation within man, and that is a diagram 7. If you trace the course of this inner wave, its main direction, and only its main direction, runs along beside the junction of those nerves, which are, as you know, incorrectly referred to as the sensory and motor nerves. This is only said in passing, for my wish today is to concentrate on describing the soul spiritual aspect of this phenomenon. With this, you can see the strong contrast that exists in man's relationship to his soul spiritual surroundings and to himself, namely to that portion that he absorbs from these surroundings as his subconscious, and which I have had to sketch here as the red wave floating on the universal blue sea of the soul spiritual cosmos. We have said that this wave here, again referring to diagram 2, corresponds in a certain sense to the barrier that man comes up against if he wants to know about the outer world. But here too, on the left of the same diagram, there is a barrier. There is a barrier within man himself. Were this barrier not present, you would be perpetually looking at your inner being. Everyone would be looking within himself. So just as if this barrier were not there, man would behold the outer world. He would, in the same way, gaze into his inner being if this barrier did not exist. It is indeed the case that if a person were to look into himself in the present cycle of evolution, he would derive little joy from doing so, because what he would see is a thoroughly imperfect, chaotic, seething turbulence in his inner nature, something that could give no great pleasure. But it is what mystics who are divorced from reality believe they can perceive when they speak of mysticism. What is very often regarded by these mystics as a goal worthy of their aspirations, especially any such mystics whom I characterized on a previous occasion last year, who really believe that when they look into themselves they are able to learn about the universe in accordance with their mystic path, all this is veiled, wholly concealed, by this blockage. Man cannot look into himself. What is formed within this region is dammed up and is reflected, for it can at least be reflected. And this reflective quality is manifested in memory, our faculty of recollection. Every time a thought or an impression that you have apprehended is recollected in memory, it does so through the working of this wave of obstruction. If you did not have this inner barrier, every impression that you receive from outside, every thought that you grasp, would pass through you, would be unable to remain within you, and would go out into the rest of the soul's spiritual universe. You retain the impressions that you receive only because you have this inner wave of obstruction. Because of this, however, you are in a position to recall your impressions through certain processes still to be described. And this comes to expression in the functioning of recollection, of memory. Thus you can picture to yourself that you have within you something like a flat surface, which is drawn here in the diagram in profile, for this is how it is drawn. There is such a plane within you, where what is not supposed to penetrate is thrust back. When you awake, you remain united with the outside world, Otherwise, in the waking state, everything would go through you. You would actually know nothing of impressions. You would receive impressions, but would be unable to hold on to them. This is what is signified by memory. And the obstructive surface that gives rise to our memory conceals what mystics, who are divorced from reality, would very much like to behold within themselves. As for what is in these nether regions, it could be said that anyone who really knows about these things would cherish the saying that man, quote, should never wish to behold what they, the gods, have mercifully concealed with night and obscurity, close quote. But mystics live in their fantasies and want to behold these inner regions. However, they are unable to do so in any case, because they would undermine and corrupt normal consciousness to such an extent that the wave of recollection would not be thrust back. That same quality that constitutes our memory, which is so necessary to us for outward life, is what conceals all that these mystics would like to see, but which man is not supposed to look upon. Underlying your memory, what causes your memory and what lies at its surface is an essential aspect of man. But just as the back or coating of a mirror reflects back what is in front of it, what is in your consciousness does not pass behind it. It is thrown back, and is therefore able to continue there as memory. Thus our whole life can be reflected as a memory. What we call the life of our ego is essentially the reflecting of this memory. So you see that our conscious life is actually lived between this wave on the right and this one on the left. We would therefore be like sieves that let everything through if we did not have this wave of obstruction, which is the basis for memory. And we would have insight into mysteries beyond the limits of knowledge, if we were not obliged to form concepts for what is outside the sense-perceptible realm, for which we have no content. If we were organized in such a way that we were unable to produce this wave of obstruction, we would be like sieves. If we were organized so that we did not need to formulate these dark concepts devoid of content, we would be loveless beings incapable of love, and with stony and barren hearts. Nothing in the world would please us. We would all have a similar nature to Mephistopheles. It is because we are organized in such a way that we are unable to approach the soul spiritual aspect of our environment with our abstract concepts, with our intellectual capacities, that we are able to love. For it would not be right for us to approach what we should love by analyzing it in the ordinary sense of the word, by dissecting it and treating it as chemists treat chemical substances in the laboratory. We do not love when we engage in chemical analysis or synthesis. The faculty of memory and the capacity for love are two qualities which correspond at one and the same time to two boundaries of human nature. The faculty of memory corresponds to the inner boundary. What lies beyond the zone of memory is the inner realm of man's subconscious. The other zone corresponds to the power of love. And what lies beyond this zone corresponds to the soul spiritual aspect of the universe. Thus the unconscious part of human nature lies beyond the one zone, in so far as man's inner realm extends, whereas the soul spiritual aspect of the universe reaches without limit into the expanses lying beyond the other zone. We can therefore speak of the zone of love and the zone of memory, and man's soul spiritual being can be encompassed within these zones. But beyond the one zone, see diagram 2, left-hand side, we must seek what remains unconscious, and remains so for the reason that it is very strongly connected with the bodily nature of man, with his bodily organism. Naturally, things are in reality not as simple as they have to be portrayed, because everything is interwoven with everything else. What is drawn here in red, see diagram 2, extends into other areas and is changed. And what is green and blue is also subject to change. Everything actually merges into everything else. Nevertheless, for the most part, the drawing that has been sketched is correct and corresponds to the facts. But from this you can see that physical life here on earth has a strong and conscious spiritual aspect to it. Here, left, is an unconscious spiritual domain which merges into the universe. These two parts of man's being can be very closely distinguished from one another. This spiritual region in the middle is specifically for earthly life, and therefore very subtly woven. Everything here, yellow, is what I might call finely woven light. If I had to show where this finely woven light is in man, I would have to go to what I have been so minutely describing, the human head. What I have thus described, what I have drawn over on the other side in yellow, yellow-green, and yellow-orange, is what might be called finely woven spirit light. This has no strong affinity with earthly matter. It actually has the least possible connection with earthly matter. Because it has little affinity, it is also difficult for it to form a connection with matter, and so it remains, for the greater part, unconnected with it. And the matter that is made available to this part actually derives from a person's previous incarnation. The head, that which forms the human head, the formative forces of the human head, are essentially drawn from the previous incarnation. And there is but a loose connection between this delicately woven soul-spiritual nature and the bodily nature, which is actually held together out of the previous incarnation. The qualities and capacities of your physiognomy are carried over from your previous incarnation. Those who know about understanding people gain insight through the physiognomy of the head, not through what derives from an inner luciferic source, but rather through the manner in which a person adapts himself to the outer universe. One has to look at the physiognomy as though it were impressed into a person. It is not so much that it is the result of this process, but one must in a certain sense regard it as the negative counterpicture of the soul realm. It is this that one sees in this negative image of the face. If you were to form an impression of any face, you would actually see a physiognomy that betrays to an extreme degree what you did in your previous incarnation. On the other hand, everything that I have sketched in those nether regions as being connected only with the surging sea of the soul spiritual aspect of the world, all that is to be conceived as corresponding to man's subconscious or unconscious, is strongly related to the bodily nature and fully pervades it. This bodily nature is connected with the spiritual domain in such a way that the latter is barely able to manifest itself in its own right. Hence, if one were to look down at this region, one would perceive this intermingling of the spiritual and bodily aspects that lies beyond the threshold of memory. This is what prepares the head of the next incarnation and seeks to be metamorphosed into what will acquire solid material form only in the future, and will become head only in the next incarnation. For man's head has become overdeveloped, with the result that its development, and as you may recall from previous lectures that I have given here, has actually come to an end by a person's 27th or 28th year. In the form of the head, there is already an overdevelopment of man. But strange as it may seem, the rest of man is also a head. although his development in this respect has not yet approached that of the head itself. If you imagine a person who has been beheaded, what remains is also a human head, but at a greatly retarded stage. If it develops further, it will also become a head. Whereas, what you have as the human head has been the rest of the organism in a previous incarnation. If you think of what in your present organism is not yet head as disembodied, freed from the body, thus, if you think the head away from your present organism, which will become a head only in the next incarnation, parenthesis, even though this organism of yours is but an image, everything physical is an image of something spiritual, close parenthesis. If you imagine instead the spiritual aspect of what in its outward form has not yet appeared in man, you see this manifested in our luciferic figure of the group. This is what you are seeing. And now imagine all that is of a soul spiritual nature, which has been held back from your head, thus all that represents a barrier for man and which he cannot penetrate, see diagram 2 on the right, compressed into the human head. Then man will not have the old dignified head that he ordinarily possesses, but he will have a fossilized looking head, as bony as the figure of Ahriman in our group. Thus, if you imagine what lies beneath the boundary of memory, spread throughout man's inner being, you arrive at all that is luciferic. And if you think of everything that is beyond this wave of obstruction on the right of diagram 2, extended into the human figure, you get the Ahrimanic form, and man is between the two. What I have been explaining to you here has considerable significance, not only for an understanding of man, but also for an understanding of the spiritual processes at work in human evolution. Unless we have a fundamental understanding of these things, we shall never be able to understand how Christianity and the Christ impulse have entered the evolution of mankind. It is also impossible to understand the part that the Catholic Church has played, the roles of Jesuitism and similar streams, and those of the East and the West, if one does not view them in connection with these matters. I shall allow myself to say something to you tomorrow about these streams, such as those of East and West, Jesuitism, Americanism, and so on, which can be properly understood only if one has a clear awareness of what lies at the foundation of man's soul-spiritual being. The end of Lecture 2.